Hi, this is JD Wisgo from selftaughtjapanese.com, and this is episode 13 of Japanese Grammar and More. As for the title of this podcast, for the most part, I like to focus on Japanese grammar, as well as some vocabulary that goes along with that. However, I've decided that once in a while, I'd like to dedicate an episode to a special topic, which is a bit different than grammar. I think this will be a good change of pace once in a while. And then in the next episode, I'll get back to business as usual, which is talking about grammar. So for the first special episode, I wanted to talk about something that you see a lot around on the internet, and it's basically talking about how difficult Japanese is. Some people will complain, write long posts, and give all these reasons why Japanese is such a hard language to learn, or it's impossible, etc., etc. And, you know, I think reading these sometimes can be frustrating and can really turn people off from the language. So what I wanted to do is to give sort of a unbiased evaluation of Japanese, what I'm calling the good, bad, and the ugly of the Japanese language, and to kind of give you my feeling after studying for over 20, 25 years at this point, to kind of look at that, and just to give you my opinion on that. Of course, it's kind of subjective. Some things are easy for some people and harder for other people, but I still think this would be an interesting topic to dedicate an episode to. Now, just to give you an idea of where I'm coming from, of course, my native language is English. However, I have studied Spanish for a few years, I guess 2 or 3. I also studied German for a few months and Chinese for just a little bit, a few weeks. So although I don't really consider myself fluent in too many languages, I think I have looked at enough different languages to get a feel for some of the different things that can be pros and cons or can be good and bad in different languages, the different trade-offs. So for Japanese, first let's talk about the good. Now, I have a few things that I wanted to mention. The first of those is just the fact that learning Japanese is great because there's so many ways you can use it. Of course, anime is popular nowadays and has been for quite a while. There's a lot of movies, Japanese TV series, which we call doramas, and also even books. You know, Japanese literature is great. Now, I spend a lot of time reading that myself, in some cases translating that. So that's one of the cool things about Japanese, that there's really so many places to apply it. A lot of these resources are free, especially the literature. There's websites online where you can get hundreds of free legal Japanese pieces of literature for those that no longer have copyright on them anymore. The copyright is expired. In particular, Aozora Bunko is a really good one for that. So it's just, you know, there's endless resources related to that. Also, just for studying Japanese, it's one of the more common languages. And as a result, you know, not just podcasts, but also there's, you know, so many YouTube channels and so many textbooks. And I'm sure you've seen all the websites as well. So that's another really good thing about Japanese. And another thing that's not related directly to the language is that Japan itself is a really great place to travel. It's very safe. I believe one of the safest countries. It's also extremely clean. And the people there are really nice. There's a lot of advantages. Of course, it's nice to live there as well. But if you want to travel there and you want to start learning Japanese to travel there, I think, you know, that's a really great perk, a really good thing to look forward to, having a great trip to Japan and using your Japanese there. So I wanted to mention two other things in the good category that are more directly tied to the language itself. And these are very important. One of them is grammar. Although you'll hear different people talk about pros and cons of grammar, I feel that Japanese grammar is relatively easy compared to pretty much all the other languages I've studied. Just to give you an idea, one of the things is the tenses are very few. There's not a large number of tenses. There's also not really plurals, with a few exceptions. Conjugation is relatively straightforward. Like in some languages, you have to look at the subject and you have to conjugate based on the subject. There's nothing like that in Japanese. And generally speaking, I would call Japanese more of a minimalist language because it really only includes things that you really have to say. Other things are omitted. Words like it, a lot of times the subject, the object. There's so many things omitted. You know, you can easily have a sentence that's just a verb, right? Like a taberu itself is a sentence, you know, I will eat, but the I is missing. And even the will is kind of implied there. So it's really a single word that captures a lot. And depending on the context, it can mean different things. So the fact that it's minimalist, for the most part, I think that's actually a good thing. Because if you're not sure, you can often just omit it and you still end up with a natural result. Whereas if you started omitting words in English, more often than not, you'd kind of get stuck and things wouldn't work out well. And finally, in the good category, I think the pronunciation, for the most part, is pretty straightforward. You know, you only have 5 vowels, a, I, u, e, o, and then, you know, you have all the consonants, akasata, na, hama, ya, rawa, and then all the combination of those, but it's really not that bad. Of course, it's a little tricky to try to blur sound to the other, and that's something that takes time. But I think overall, it's actually not that hard compared to a lot of languages, especially maybe Mandarin or other languages that have much more complicated pronunciation. And there is some tricky things like devoweling, not emphasizing vowels like ski instead of saying suki. And those things are kind of a case-by-case basis, but for the most part, I think those are relatively minor. Now, I do have one other point about pronunciation, but I'm going to save that for the end in the ugly section. So wait for me for that. All right, now on the bad. These are the negative things that basically make Japanese learning hard. One of them is, of course, the alphabets. There's three alphabets, hiragana, katakana, and kanji. And the first two are not that bad. There's some similarities. There's not a huge number of characters. And you can probably learn them in, you know, a few weeks. It's not that bad. But kanji, which are the characters that came from Chinese originally, there's a huge number of those. Now, the Jōyō kanji, which is just the real base level of kanji that every average person should know, is around 2,000 characters. And there's even more that you should know for names. And then the total number of kanji is very large. I mean, in actual modern-day use, it's maybe 10,000. It's a pretty big number. It's a lot larger in Chinese, but even in Japanese, that's a huge number of characters to learn. Although personally, I love kanji. I think it's fun to study and it really enriches the language, and it can even help your pronunciation because you can basically hear a sound and you can map that to a kanji in your mind and then map that to a meaning. And you can actually sometimes guess the meanings of words just by knowing all that information. So kanji is not just the writing. It also relates to the meaning and in the sound. So it's all connected. But for the most part, it is a lot of work. And to be honest, you know, I've seen several people who will start learning kanji and they see there's thousands of characters. So they start making flashcards and they start going crazy and making these decks, all these applications and online stuff, and try to, you know, force themselves to learn hundreds and hundreds of kanji in a small amount of time. And that can easily lead to burnout. So, you know, while it does take many years to learn kanji, I don't think you should force yourself. I think you should learn to enjoy it and take it at your own pace. I mean, some people, they just don't focus that much on kanji. I met somebody the other day who lived in Japan a long time, and he just really, you know, didn't focus on kanji. He can read basic stuff, but, you know, it's possible that I actually can read more kanji than he can, just because I'm reading a lot, much more Japanese literature on a daily basis. So another thing in the bad category is the many levels of politeness in Japanese. That's something we haven't really focused on yet in this series, although I do plan to spend a lot of time on it in the future. But just to give you an example, we have the word taberu, which is to eat. That's kind of the simple, non-polite, just very basic form. And then there's the desmas form, tabemasu. And then there's even a more polite form after that, which is meshiagaru, which is basically humbling yourself. If you're asking somebody to eat, you can say meshiagatte kudasai. You can use terms like that. And there's even versions of eat which are less polite, like the word ku, which means eat as well, but it has like a really crude nuance. So you wouldn't want to use that in a lot of settings. You've got to be careful with that. So there's, of course, learning all the different words for the different politeness levels and knowing when to use them. And it's not just the verbs. There's even first person pronouns and different variations of different nouns. Do you say sushi versus osushi? There's a lot of variations of that. It's pretty tricky. And although I do enjoy it, overall, it's a huge amount of work to really master that and be able to kind of move back and forth between all the different politeness levels in Japanese. Because in a sentence, typically you don't just use one. The verb at the end might have a mas form, but the one a verb in the middle of the sentence might have a regular form. So you have to actually use these in concert, use them combined. And finally, in the bad category, I wanted to mention that Japanese to me, it feels like there's a lot of variation, a lot of differences depending on the situation, specifically depending on the speaker, whether male or female, their age, the region they're from, even the time period. Like if you go back 100 years and you look at the literature there, it feels like it's pretty different. I mean, there's a lot of differences, even just basic verbs, basic grammar. You know, I've gradually learned to read that and understand that, but it's quite different. If you go back to English a century ago, I don't know, just to me, it feels like it hasn't changed as much. I don't know if that's just my bias, but that's how I feel. And like I said, depending on the region, there's regional dialects. Older people were likely to speak with a dialect or, you know, the region they're from. Even male, female, young, old, there's a lot of variation. There's ways to sound feminine. Taberu no yo would be an expression that more reserved for or has more of a nuance for women, or at least a feminine. You can have people that are guys, but they want to speak in a feminine way, which is fine too. They could also use that. And then there's some expressions that are kind of in the middle that are not very feminine that have a little bit of feminine nuance. So that's something that in English, I don't think really exists too much. There's a few maybe exceptions, but for the most part, it isn't present in English. And finally, the last section is what I'm calling ugly, which is kind of a worse version of bad. I mean, this is basically to me like the hardest thing of Japanese. So I kind of skipped over this when I talked about pronunciation in the good category. But to me, the intonation, which is how the individual sounds rise and fall within a word, within a sentence, is extremely complicated in Japanese. Again, I haven't focused on that too much. I do try to speak with proper intonation and I'll point that out in some cases, but I wouldn't expect you, or I wouldn't expect really anyone who hasn't lived in Japan for a really long time, to have great intonation, because it's a case-by-case basis. And not only is it each word is different, but when words go together, one word can affect the intonation of another word. So it's pretty complicated. And again, that also depends on region. You have maybe the Kansai dialect versus the Tokyo dialect, and they'll have different intonations. They could be reverse in one case. of the other. So, and you know, if you're watching TV and you learn from anime or you learn from watching a drama or something, you're going to hear people of different accents. So if you don't really know what you're listening for, you know, you're just going to pick that up and you start copying them. And then you're going to be speaking with a mix of different intonations, different accents from different regions. So it's just extremely difficult. It's very difficult. And, you know, you can read, you can look at textbooks, you can watch YouTube channels. And I just found it's hard to listen for and to pick up. And it's also hard to emulate because there's just so many things involved. So although I do focus on my intonation, I try to get it as native as possible. It's a really long-term thing for me. I wouldn't focus on it. I would be aware of the intonation, but I really wouldn't focus on it. And the good news is, even if you have a weird intonation, the odds are that people will still understand you because, like I said, it does differ by region. There'll be people from the country or whatever that may have different intonation, and for the most part, they're understood. Sometimes, even if you watch like a Japanese TV show or like a news broadcast, and you have these older people with accents from regional areas like the countryside, and maybe they speak with a dialect or something, oftentimes there'll be subtitles. So even within the country, sometimes I think there's a little bit of challenge to understand all the different dialects and intonations. Keep in mind the dialects are not just the intonation. There's also totally different expressions that are used in different areas of Japan. That's the ugly intonation, but yeah, I don't think it's that bad. To me, it's sort of a minor thing. Finally, I did want to end with teaching an expression that you can use in daily life, and I'll give a few versions of it. The simplest is chotto matte. Now, chotto means a little. Matte comes from the verb matsu, which means to wait. And if you remember from previous episodes, I talked about how the te form is basically sort of a light command. So I could say chotto matte, which basically means, literally it means wait a little, but it's kind of like a wait a second, hold on a minute, that kind of a thing. It's not really a specific amount of time, but it's just a general hold up, wait a minute type of thing. Chotto matte. Now, if you wanted to make it a little more polite, you could say chotto matte kudasai. And then there's even other versions, omachi kudasai, or I think there's one you might hear like in a restaurant or something like a shoshou machi kudasai. And where shōshō means chotto, basically. It's just a different form. Shōshō machi kudasai. So that's even more polite. So again, there's different variations of it. And you could even add the particle ne that we recently learned. Chotto matte ne. Wait a second, okay? That's sort of a feeling. So there's a lot of different variations, but that's a good expression to know, especially in daily life, if you want somebody to just wait up for a minute there. Anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Mata jikai.